Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
They don't want to be talking about it.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. He gives it to Wall. Morgan gets Bradley for three. John Wall! Oh, what a shot! You talked about a pressure shot.
What's happening, everyone? This is the Locked On Wizards podcast, and I'm your host, Noah Getzel. So the Wizards fell tonight in a heartbreaker to the Celtics in overtime, 110-104. And we're going to recap that game for you. We're also going to talk about a potential playoff rematch between the Celtics and Wizards, just like the Eastern Conference semifinals last year. And finally, at the end of the podcast, we're going to talk about this wild trade deadline today with Wizards extra contributor, Bryna Kramer. But first, we bring in the Locked On Celtics podcast host, John Corrales. He also is a contributor for Boston Globe, Boston.com, and he's the co-founder of Red's Army, a basketball blog about the Celtics. John, thanks so much. It's an honor having you on the show. Thanks for joining. I know it's late at night.
It's late, but, you know, I always love talking about basketball, so not a problem.
Cool. So the first question, of course, we have to start with this foul three-pointer at the end of regulation, about 10 seconds to go. Clearly, there are a ton of mistakes that the Wizards made throughout the game. They had 22 turnovers, but with, I think it was like 15 seconds left, Irving kind of drives by on a mismatch against Markieff Morris. He gets it around the corner three-point line area and rises up for a three. It looks like there was ever so slight of an amount of contact on his arm, perhaps. Markieff Morris said after the game that he was mic'd up, so you can hear exactly what he said. But basically, like, if he were to have hit Irving's arm, he wouldn't have even gotten the shot off. Did you see that play as a foul?
I saw it. He did hit his arm. He did not hit his arm very hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are plays where people get much more contact and there's no foul called. However, the problem here and why I saw it as a foul, not because I'm a Boston guy, I saw it as a foul because I saw the ball move in Kyrie's grip. So as slight as that impact might have been, and you can call it a brush, you could, yeah, I will agree that it was not much force, but because it did adjust the ball in Kyrie's grip, it impacted the shot. Mm-hmm. And that is why it was a foul. Not necessarily because, oh, he barely touched him. It's because it impacted the shot, and that's going to be a foul every time, or should be a foul every time.
A little bit of context on this play. The Wizards were up 98-95 at the time. They had hit a couple of free throws to keep that advantage as we went into the waning seconds. Irving gets fouled. He hits all three of his free throws, and then Bradley Beal is going up against Irving on the final play with those 9.8 seconds remaining. It's a mismatch. Irving is on him, but Beal can't take advantage, and he kind of gets off balance, loses his footing a little bit, and forces up this awful fadeaway. The game goes to overtime. The Celtics dominate in overtime. I think the Wizards missed like 10 of 12 field goals or something like that in the final 5 minutes. But it seemed like in the olden days of basketball, the refs would always eat their whistles at the end of the game. Is that more something that happens when there's contact in the paint? Or do you think with the three-point game being such an important feature of today's, you know, modern basketball, you know, if you're shooting three and you get fouled, it's still the same deal. Like, a foul is a foul. Is that kind of how you see it?
I think when there's a lot of when two guys are trying to initiate, like if a guy's trying to drive to the rim and he's sort of initiating contact and he's being challenged, I think those tend to be kind of left alone. Those are the plays where they quote unquote swallow the whistle. When a player has his shot clearly impacted, I think that's a little bit different. And so I think there are instances where guys get those calls. I mean, it happened to the Boston Celtics last season, the season before. It all jumbles together, but there was a game against the Bulls where Jimmy Butler, almost the exact same play, same spot on the floor. I forget who it was that fouled him, but it was probably a couple years ago, so it might have been Evan Turner, but forget it. The point is, those plays when a guy gets hit on the arm and the referee determines that it's going to impact his shot, that gets called. When two guys are flying to the rim and it's body contact, but the ball kind of has an avenue to get out without the arm being hit, that's a little bit different because I think the referees just see two guys kind of flying to the same spot, and I don't think they're going to reward a guy for hunting for a foul in that situation. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think they're going to make a determination on did a defender do anything to impact the shot in the process of the shot? Did he do something to impact the shooting motion in the process of the shot?
Yeah. And Irving,
just like the second time when he barely touched Kyrie on the second 3-point play, the second 3-point foul, he barely touched him on the elbow, but that elbow affects how much power you put behind the shot, right? And that impacts the shot. So those little things, not a ton of, it's a very bare minimum contact, but that impacts the shot, so they're going to call it.
I think I've got to stop obsessing about this 3-pointer that will give me nightmares all night if I do get to sleep at all. What do you think was the difference in this game? Obviously, Kyrie had 22 of his 28 points after halftime. Is he looking back to his normal self now?
Well, not quite. I would say that he's if he was more of his normal self, he would have hit a couple of those shots to close out instead of losing that 10-point lead, because the Celtics lost the 10-point lead,
right?
And you guys took a lead, you know, end up going up 3. So there is an opportunity there for the Celtics to close out that game. And I was sitting there we're about to flip sides. Like, I was going to be sitting there talking about a very frustrating loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the difference in the game was that they basically took Bradley Beal out of the game, and there was no recovering from that. I mean, Porter had a nice game, but without Beal, I mean, you hold Beal to 26%, and you're going to win a lot of those games when John Wall's not playing. You know, look, Satoransky had a nice game, Porter had a nice game, but outside of that, there was not a whole lot of help. They did a nice job limiting a guy that has been playing really, really well, and the Celtics, I think, did a good job in the second half, just kind of tightening up the defense. The third quarter defense was really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really where it was won. Their overall defense, but mostly on Beal. And I think towards the end, their defense, when they did play well on Beal, like, some of it was just Beal missing. But I think he was missing at the end because he was frustrated by the rest of the game. And he was forcing a couple of things. The missed dunk, like, all of that, I think, just played into just Beal being frustrated by what he was seeing from the Celtics. So I think that's pretty much where they won the game.
Mm-hmm. Beal only got one free throw attempt, so that's got to be frustrating for a guy who shoots it 27 times, too. He shot just 7 of 27. And you mentioned Otto Porter. He did have a great game, 27 points. But in the fourth quarter and overtime, he made one big bucket. I think there were about 3 minutes left. It was the Wizards' last field goal of regulation. He only had 6 points in the fourth quarter in overtime. I know a lot of Wizards fans will be upset he didn't get a touch on that last possession for the Wizards. But ultimately, the Wizards were sloppy with the ball. They were missing a ton in the paint. And that's what lost the game. You can talk all you want about this foul, which was the first thing I wanted to talk to you about, of course, on Kyrie, but ultimately, you know, it's 4 quarters and then 5 extra minutes of the extra session. So we're going to take a real quick break now, and John Corrales is coming right back at you to talk about a potential playoff matchup rematch between these two teams. So stay tuned to the Locked On Wizards podcast. We'll be right back. Hey guys, welcome back to the Locked On Wizards podcast. We are graced with the presence of John Corrales of Locked On Celtics. He's the Locked On Celtics host. And John, can you let the followers know where people can find you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm at RedsArmy_John, and also on the Locked On Celtics Twitter is actually at Rainin_Jays, because we originally were the Rainin Jays podcast before we joined the Locked On Podcast Network. So that's me, Jay King, and Sam Packard started this a few years ago, and we were one of the original shows to join the Locked On Podcast Network. So there's some still Rainin Jays branding. That's what we've called ourselves. But yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at RedsArmy_John.
Nice. I'm pretty much the same deal. So I'm part of the Wizards Extra blog, and we do videos and Twitter coverage and write articles. And then we do podcasts too. So we kind of have taken on the Locked On Wizards ordeal. And speaking of reigning Jays, the Celtics were just 9 of 26 tonight, but they're the fourth best team in terms of made three-pointers all season long. If this, first of all, this matchup tonight is much must-watch TV. Am I right?
Oh yeah, I thought it was a good game, and you know, over the past couple of years, the Celtics Wizards has been a nice little like sort of burgeoning rivalry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, the Celtics are probably going to shoot it better when they're at full strength. If this playoff matchup were to repeat, who do you think would make a difference that wasn't playing tonight? Obviously, one of your best defenders, Marcus Smart, still has that deep cut in his hand, right?
Yeah, you know, he had a little fight with a framed photo at a hotel.
I think he lost.
He lost that fight for sure. Ugh, Marcus. Yeah, so the Celtics at full strength are going to be an interesting matchup with the Wizards. I'm really curious to see what happens when Wall comes back. You know, this whole everybody eats thing, and, you know, the Gortat, you know, team tweet that he had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious to see one thing that from the outside looking in, I've just been wondering if the Wizards are starting to show cracks in the facade. Like, you know, sometimes when teams, you keep running it back with the same team, after a little while, there starts to get some friction. You know, guys might be, for lack of a better term, a little sick of each other. So I just wonder if some of that might be going on in Washington. We'll see. I know Gortat was floated in trade rumors, but here we are. So if the Wizards can't get their act together and they have some fractures, then it's going to be tough to beat the Celtics. The thing with Marcus Smart is you can stick him on either Beal or Wall down the stretch. Now, Wall's fast, but Marcus is strong. Mm-hmm. And he can get spots, and if Wall gets frustrated and just tries to beat you with speed, if Smart can get to a spot fast enough, then he can draw charges. He's clearly adept at, I'll call it, selling a foul. But will, yeah. So he Marcus Smart beat the Rockets on two charges from James Harden at the end of the game. So he basically sealed a Rockets collapse and a Celtics win by drawing two fouls on Harden. So he can do that. He's been known to do that. And he'll make those plays. So having him in the backcourt changes things significantly. Jaylen Brown's emergence changes things this year from last year, because last year Brown was not as playable as he is this year. I mean, he had that step back three tonight, which was huge. And that's something I haven't seen from him. Like, he's playing offensively. He's playing better now than he was at the beginning of the season. So he's making strides as the season is progressing. And his year two leap from year one has been phenomenal. So,
oh yeah, leaps and bounds, no doubt.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, if you could put him and Smart, I mean, the Celtics will play him, Smart, and Kyrie at the same time, and you can try to hide Kyrie maybe on Oubre or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow get a matchup where you can defend the two most dangerous players and then make up for the rest. And so this year's playoff series would be significantly different than last year's. The addition of Marcus Morris, he had a nice fourth quarter. He's been a little frustrating, and I think he can help. But ISO Marcus Morris has been a little bit kind of up and down for us. And now the addition of Greg Monroe, who we got our first taste of him in green tonight.
Technical foul, like, what, 3 minutes into time on the court?
Going to endear him to Boston fans immediately. But he adds a different dimension to the game. And the Celtics' second unit has struggled to score. But I like the addition of Monroe, not just because he can get the ball in the post and score or face up a little bit. We saw him have a nice drive from the top of the key that he got fouled on. Aside from that individual stuff that he can do, I'm excited to see what kind of passer he's going to be, because he's going to draw attention. You have to pay attention to Monroe on the block. You might have to send a double team. And if you do that, then he's going to find guys. He had a couple of nice passes where they dumped it into him in the post and immediately cut back door. And he found guys twice. It didn't end up working out both times. I think one of them was a missed shot, but the play itself was right there. And I think action behind Monroe when he's in the post, cuts and different actions behind him to get guys open, can be an effective way to get guys that are decent. Terry Rozier, they'll play Jason Tatum with the second unit. Even if they have Aaron Baines or Daniel Tice out there, guys who are decent, when you get those guys open looks, they become much better players. And I think him on the post and the attention that he draws could get those guys more open looks, which will make that bench a little bit more dangerous. And I will single out Terry Rozier because...
Yeah, I was going to mention him too. His defense was on the spot tonight, even though he didn't come away with any steals. He had 12 points, which was nice offensively, but he was just a dog on Beal all night. Was he the primary defender, or who was mostly guarding Beal tonight?
They mixed it up. I mean, yeah. The Celtics switch a lot, so Tatum, I mean, Rozier starts on Beal, but then guys switch out. The thing with Rozier is when Kyrie was out for a couple of games with the bruised thigh, he stepped in and really played well, and I think that really helped his confidence. He's played a lot better since the Kyrie injury. Even now that Kyrie's back, he's given the Celtics some really, really good minutes. To the point where people have been talking about Terry Rozier's emergence, making Smart sort of expendable. So I'm not going to go that far. I think Smart is still very valuable to this team. But having Terry Rozier on as another guy that you can throw in there, either in case of emergency or... Hey, if Marcus Smart's struggling and you need to play Rozier some more minutes, he and Kyrie kind of played okay next to each other. So that's a guy that can do some damage. So the Celtics are pretty deep, and they can go big, they can go small, which, you know, it'll be interesting. It'll be a challenge for the Wizards to kind of match up with that, and we'll see how that goes. Look, your bench has improved. Satoransky's a good player. It's going to be interesting to see how all that works out.
You hit in on a couple of key points for the Wizards this year, and you mentioned that kind of having the same crew year after year, not really adding anyone, can add frustration and have things boil over for the team. When you look at a team like the Toronto Raptors, they're, you know, keeping the same crew together, and they stay at the top of the Eastern Conference, but, you know, they haven't really proved anything in the playoffs. I think you're totally right that the Wizards are just talking too much and they haven't proved a thing. And, you know, last season in the post against the Celtics in that series, the Wizards just let leads evaporate in the first two games. They were up by at least 10, I believe, in the first quarters. And, you know, they just couldn't hold on. Probably a coaching advantage for Brad Stevens there. And speaking of the Wizards talking too much, you said Marcus Smart is one of the most elite defenders and really gives John Wall some fits. But Wall said anytime they play the Celtics, whether it's Avery Bradley or Marcus Smart guarding him, he would just say, you know, do you think he should have gotten some more calls? Should have gone to the line a little bit more? He'll just say, hey, look at my arms. Do you see all of these cuts? It was like I was playing Wolverine tonight. So he's definitely one of the guys to speak his mind about that. It's Avery Bradley was the guy that Wall mentioned as the best defender that he faces But then he mentioned, you know, the toughest cover is Kyrie Irving. Irving looks back to his normal self. He's got the ball on the string. We'll see what John Wall comes back. He'll probably only play about 5, maybe 10 games of the rest of the regular season once he's back from his knee procedure. So who knows what type of John Wall you'll get in the playoffs. And only time will tell, but let's hope for some more rematches. We got 2 more in the regular season, and then we'll see what happens after that.
John, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time to join this podcast late Thursday night. It's 12:38 Eastern time right now. So I'll let you get to bed, and thank you so much for being on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Everyone tune in to Locked On Celtics, too, and check out his blogs, Red's Army. Awesome.
Well, thanks for having me on, and welcome to the network.
Thanks so much, buddy. That was John Corrales, the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. And we're going to take a real quick break now, and we'll be right back with the Locked On Wizards podcast. We'll be talking to Wizards Extra contributor Bryna Kramer about the crazy trade deadline that went down and how the Wizards stayed quiet throughout the day. Everyone thought that Marcin Gortat would have been on the move, maybe a backup shooting guard would be in the mix, but not much happening there. Just a Sheldon Mack, a trade to the Atlanta Hawks that we'll talk about in just a second. So stay tuned, stay locked in on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Hey, welcome back to the Locked On Wizards podcast. So we just heard from John Corrales, the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast, to analyze the heartbreaker loss here in Washington against the Celtics. And now we're graced with having Wizards Extra reporter Bryna Kramer as our second guest tonight to talk about the trade deadline. Tough loss tonight, Bryna, huh?
Yeah, that was a real heartbreaker in overtime for sure, but we'll turn it around on Saturday.
So the Wizards stayed pretty quiet while the Cavs were making all the moves. The Wizards' one deal was trading their injured guard, a reserve, Sheldon Mack, who doesn't play too much. He's 25 and has a torn Achilles, so he was out all season. I think that injury happened in the preseason. He was traded to the Hawks for a heavily protected second-round pick. And the key here is that the move saved the Wizards about $2 million because they were $5 million over the luxury tax line. What do you think of this?
First of all, you said second rounder. It was just cash considerations. There was no pick that was sent to us. I think it was good. As much as I think this season we thought Mac was going to get a chance to play a little bit more, I mean, he got injured in the preseason, so it kind of didn't work out. It saved the Wizards a little bit of money. I thought it was a fine move. I mean, Brooks was talking in his pregame presser today about how, you know, it just really opens up another roster spot for them to sign someone in the buyout market. So I think over these next 3 weeks until that deadline for the buyout market, I think is when we're hopefully going to see the Wizards make some moves. But until then, who knows?
Mm-hmm. And do you know why the Wizards held on to Sheldon Mack for so long after the season injury?
I think, what was their rush? It happened in the preseason. They wanted to see, you know, how this team could develop together with their new pieces and their new bench and give it a little bit of time. Like, there was no rush and there was no need for them to waive him. I mean, they already had an open roster spot, and then they ended up waiving Michael Young off of the two-way contract. So, like, they had that spot extra, too. Like, they had spots already. So there was no pressure for them to waive Mac if that's not what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And how many – it looks like there are 13 players on the roster. Is that right? With Devin Robinson being the two-way player, and then, of course, John Wall is injured. Do you know of any prospects out there on the market who the Wizards might be looking at the next couple of weeks in terms of another addition? I think Scott Brooks said it would be a backup point guard. Is that correct?
I don't know if Brooks said that necessarily. No, that's what our friend Candace Buckner at the Post has been reporting, that they think that the Wizards are looking at to get like a veteran point guard. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting buyout market, especially because there's so many people who are probably going to get bought out. It's going to be a very robust market. I personally think they need a shooting guard more than they need that veteran point guard, especially because when Wall comes back, you're going to have Satoransky. And Tim Frazier's been playing – I mean, it doesn't show up in the box score, but Tim Frazier's had a really good stretch of games here. So that's already three people in line at the point guard position.
Mm-hmm. And Satoransky is most natural at point guard, even though he's played all through, you know, the
right, all three
point guard, shooting guard, small forward. He's played everywhere, but he's best as a playmaker, as we've seen.
Right, and when you look at our shooting guard, we've got Bradley Beal, and Jody Meeks, you know, is up and down. He's been a little bit less consistent than Tim Frazier recently, so, but that's it. Like, that's two people, and when you really only one when you consider the inconsistency of Jody Meeks. So, like, I think that needs to be addressed more than a point guard at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one team that was a lot more exciting is the Wizards' rival in the Eastern Conference. There was a ton of moves. Basically, every player that the Cavs added over the offseason when they traded Kyrie to the Celtics is gone now. And what do they, I mean, we'll see what the pieces kind of make for the rest of the season. It's obviously tough to adjust with new players coming in. So the Cavs got rid of Isaiah Thomas after he played maybe 10, 15 games for the team. He was very inefficient and talking a lot. So we saw that. So Isaiah's gone. Jay Crowder is gone. Dwayne Wade, the banana boat buddy of LeBron, is gone. But LeBron is really happy about that. And
right.
Wade appears to be as well. He's going back to Miami. Derrick Rose played very little, even though he torched the Wizards one game. He's out. Channing Frye, the journeyman, is gone as well. What are we up to? Five players, and last was Iman Shumpert. So six players on an NBA team that has been to the finals the past three seasons are out of town. Now they brought in two young Lakers, Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance, and then two great guards for the Jazz, George Hill, a veteran leader, and then Rodney Hood, who's got a ton of potential. What can you make sense of all this?
This was, I think, probably, I mean, I really pay attention to the trade deadline. It's one of my favorite days of the year. This was one of the craziest ones I can remember in a very long time. I mean, and it happened, like, not even at the last minute. It was, like, 12:30 this afternoon. It was, like, all of a sudden you see Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye getting traded to the Lakers. And then it's like, oh, there's the three-way deal between Utah, Cleveland, and Sacramento. And then Miami comes in, and it's just like, what the freak was going on?
Keep it PG.
Yeah. Did not say it. But, yeah, I mean, I think Cleveland was a real winner. I mean, they got off a lot of their older players. They got off a little bit of money. I mean, they did commit to money with Clarkson and Nance in more years than they were probably expecting to. But they got younger. They got more athletic. They got upgrades at all of those positions. I mean, they did what they needed to do in order to try to keep LeBron past this summer. And they made themselves into more of – I still don't know if they're going to make the finals – but they made themselves into more of a contender than they've been in, like, months.
Yeah. I think the biggest key takeaway is that they cleared house of a lot of players that, as you mentioned, were a little bit older. But basically, LeBron wanted players who were going to play hard and give, you know, a genuine effort. And there's one last player who had been, you know, on and off. Kevin Love, his name was swirling a lot. They keep Kevin. And basically LeBron's hopefully, well, maybe not hopefully, if we're our Wizards fans here, if this is Wizards podcast, but it seems like LeBron is going to be rejuvenated because all of these moves kind of worked out in his favor in terms of making the roster tweaks that he wanted. Who knows if it's Kobe Altman who's GM or if it's LeBron orchestrating things behind the scenes. So we'll see how this turns out. It's obviously difficult to play with new starters, let alone four new players on the roster for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Crazy trade deadline. I still like free agency a little bit better because it's not just one day. I guess, you know, they both have a bit of a stretch, but free agency is a little bit more fun for me.
Free agency is a little bit more fun, but I think this free agency, like, it's going to be hard. No one's going to get the contracts that they want because so many people tied up money in that summer of 2016. When, like, everyone got paid. And so I think it's going to be really hard for the star free agents like DeAndre Jordan this summer to try to find the contracts that they really want. I mean, we saw Lou Williams sign an extension when he was likely going to get, you know, hopefully, like, a new contract this summer.
An extension for a bargain.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Just because he knew that probably going into the free agency wasn't his smart move. He wasn't going to get the contract that he wanted. Mm-hmm. So I think this free agency is going to be a little bit different. I do like free agency a lot, but I also just, like, I think just the, like the fact that it happens within like a span of 2 to 3 hours, like all these deals start coming and Twitter blows up, and it's just, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a lot of fun to see just like Twitter blow up. Like, if you could stay on Twitter for those like 3 hours from like 12 to 3 PM, it's a great time.
I tried at work. I tried. Thanks so much for breaking down all the fireworks of trade deadline, Bryna. Speaking of Twitter, where can our followers find you on Twitter?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at BrynaK13. That's BrynaK13.
Cool. Well, thank you so much to all of the listeners for an awesome first week with me, Noah Getzel, as your new podcast host. And we'll be back at you Monday morning. So tune in and have a great weekend, everyone. Hopefully you'll be doing a little bit better than the Wizards after this overtime heartbreaker. Take it easy.